And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. Oh, yeah. Love those horns. One Bills Live here on a Wednesday. As our extended summer continues, Steve, some nice weather.
It's
only going to last a few more days, but soaking it all up. But we weren't soaking up the experience of an extended summer quite the same way that William Shatner was soaking up his journey to the outer reaches of the Earth's atmosphere.
The guy's 90 years old.
I can't believe he's 90.
He's 90 years old, and they sent him into space today for an 11-minute flight, and he came back today.
Yeah. Awesome. Set the record for oldest person to enter Earth's orbit.
Let me just say that gives me great comfort that Captain Kirk is the oldest person.
He's finally made it.
He's in space. He's the oldest guy to ever go in space so far. You know, just awesome. Good for him.
He was aboard the Starship Blue Origin, not the Starship Enterprise. And I don't know. We may play this later in the show because he was filmed after he returned to Earth.
Right.
And he was trying to wax poetic about the experience. And somewhere about a minute in, he goes completely off the rails. He's like, down there is the blue comfort of Mother Earth, and I'm out here on the edge of death? I don't know. It's all black out here. He was somewhere between old Captain Kirk and, I don't know, some crazy old man that didn't understand where the hell he was.
Yeah, I think
what happened to him?
I think that's what happens when a 90-year-old gets a rush of adrenaline all of a sudden.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it was the G-forces, you know, hurtling him into early senility or so. I don't know what was going on.
Awesome stuff.
Somebody needed to get him an oxygen mask. I don't know. We may play an excerpt of that because he's standing there with Jeff Bezos, who's trying to be polite and hear him out, and he's kind of stammering and stumbling through his words, trying to explain what he just experienced. And he was off the rails in a hurry. So
that's good, though. I mean, that was pretty awesome. I just, you know.
Would you want to do that? Would you want to get onto the edge of space there out in the Earth's orbit?
Yeah, I think so. I'd do
that. You want to give it a whirl?
I've traveled by air, you know, tons, a bunch.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's a little bit different than that. A little, you know, certainly the G-forces you pull at a rocket are different.
I don't know if I want them pulling on my body.
I think everybody should jump at that chance. It's science fiction stuff, right?
It's
pretty cool.
Yeah, the journey was supposed to, the rocket trip was supposed to take place on Sunday. They scrubbed that because of high winds in the forecast.
Right.
And they went this morning. So 11 Good minutes, man. He's back.
Safe and sound.
And, it was a three-minute dissertation on his dissertation on the 11-minute flight was almost as long as the flight.
Yeah. when you get out there, and I don't know, maybe he had a window. I guess he did have a window and stuff where you can look out.
Yeah, they're looking out, yeah.
But the simple fact of how – think about his life and all the stuff he's known for and been, you know, asked about in his whole life to have – that experience now under his belt and to really see what it's like, that probably unpacked a lot of issues for him, you know?
Okay.
I just think it's pretty cool.
How
far we've come in our lifetime. I always make this thing. My grandfather, who passed away, you know, decades ago, in his life, we went from horse and buggy to jet travel, you know, intercontinental travel by jet. In our life, yours and mine, we've gone from television, you know, just having a TV in your house, to having in your hand space travel and space stations.
Yeah.
And
I remember I had to do an oral history report for school, and you had to do it with one of your grandparents. And my grandfather, who was born in 1911 and was an auto mechanic, I asked him a question, and I said, what is the greatest advances you've seen in your lifetime? And he says, it's not even close. He said, it is the technology of air travel. He's like, you got to remember, I was born 2 years after the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk.
Right. Think
I
about
was like,
that. Oh! So we go from a,
so he
like
went
from
that,
a kite with an engine
to the space shuttle.
Yeah, to the space shuttle and space stations. And now Blue Origin, you're taking a 90-year-old into space. That's big. It's big. It's pretty cool, too. Pretty cool. When am I?
One giant leap for mankind. Or sorry, people kind.
Final frontier. Yeah. Pretty cool stuff, though. And another thing, another technological advance is the Buffalo Bills rookie pass rusher is now AFC Defensive Player of the Year. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that.
Did you read that?
I was aware of that.
Yeah, I figured you were.
Knew it was coming.
You knew it was coming? When did you get the word?
Well, it's, you know, with our duties at BuffaloBills.com.
You're behind the curtain?
I mean, we have to prepare for these things, Steve.
So they give. See, that's the thing. Every once in a while, Brownie has to write an article for the website, so you get tipped off.
Yeah,
that's how.
And then I have to be quiet.
Right. Like we're. What was another one you got? When did you get tipped off?
Oh, I don't know.
I know what it was. Josh's contract extension. You got that like an hour or two before we got. So you had to write an article.
I need a little time to put it together.
An article, so that the moment it's announced. Hey, Chris Brown's got an article out, right?
Yeah.
So you are behind. You're like, your security level clearance is way higher than mine. That's
well,
all I can say.
It's a matter of time, and it's only, like you said, it's only about
an
hour.
They can't trust me to go out for a box of Kleenexes. You, however, get, Chris, we're going to extend Josh Allen to a couple of hundred million dollar extension. I want you to write an article and then keep quiet about it. We're going to announce that thing. At this certain time, so keep it quiet until then. And you are like,
you gotta
me, down. They're like, go sit in the corner and be quiet.
You'll know when you need to know.
And turn your chair around. Thank you.
You'll
know when you need to know.
Which is when everybody else already
they get, right,
does.
The email comes out and don't tell Steve. Right?
You'll know when everybody else does.
You pick up the phone. Yeah, hi, Kim, Terry. Yeah, what do you need? Gotcha. I got you. I won't do that.
Oh, boy.
And don't tell Steve.
But yes, Greg Rousseau, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Five tackles, including one for loss on a third down that led to a punt. He had a sack and a super acrobatic interception. His own teammates were ribbing him for not running with the ball. He kind of caught it. Stumbled, fell down, so they were ribbing him for that. Like, hey,
well,
dude,
listen.
where's your rack yards?
You got to pick your spots, though. He did. He kind of went down. He kicked. He caught it and kind of looked and kind of crumpled to the ground like he just wanted to make sure he ended it with possession.
I'm telling you, man, he's got like 6-8 foot strides. Who's catching that guy?
Right, and he kind of
maybe
he
the
just,
receiver
he,
catches.
He buckled. He could feel the offensive tackle there, and he kind of crumpled in to make sure he ended the play with it. You know what I say? If I'm Greg Rousseau, right today, I'm saying, well, that's what Steph Diggs did on the long catch. He did. He kind of went down too. You know,
that's
that was
valid.
A thing in that game.
So now it is 2 weeks straight that the Bills have had the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Last week it was Tremaine Edmonds, who also had an interception the week prior against Houston, had a handful of tackles. I think he had a pass breakup as well. He was Defensive Player of the Week in the Bills' shutout win over Houston.
Right.
And we know that Josh Allen has already been Offensive Player of the Week in the AFC once this year. So it kind of begs the question, Steve.
Yeah. That's
who's up next?
Who's going to win it next, offense or defense? Who's going to win a AFC Player of the Week, offense or defensive player? Who's next in line? If it's not going to be one of the guys who's already won it. Now, certainly Tremaine Edmonds or Rousseau could win it again.
Well, right.
Micah
but that's
Hyde
our,
or somebody.
That's our one stipulation. You
right.
cannot name one of the three guys that have already won. So
no
Rousseau,
repeats.
Edmonds, and Allen are not available for selection.
Right.
So aside from those that already won, who wins the next Player of the Week honor for the Bills? You can let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Be calculated about this. Take a look at some of the opponents, maybe some opposing quarterbacks, maybe the caliber of opposing defenses. Make an educated guess as to who you might think would be next up for the AFC Player of the Week award, offense or defense, or special teams, you know?
Right, could be Tyler
could
Bass.
Could be Tyler Bass.
Somebody.
That might not be a bad pick, actually.
He's
leading the league in
points
right now.
Could be Isaiah McKenzie, you know.
Tyler Bass leading the league in points right now with 52.
Well, the Bills are scoring like they're hanging. Well, yes. They're 35 points or better
right.
in the
but
last four
games. They're not kicking
games.
A lot of field goals.
He's doing it with extra points.
He's doing it with extra points.
Yeah.
He's doing it the hard way.
The hard way. Leading the league and scoring the hard way, kicking 1,000 extra points.
Yeah. So let us know what your pick is. Open line for you at 803-0550. Or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live with that. The ratings are in, Steve, for the Bills' Sunday night football game, which, as you know, was somewhat compromised by the 1 hour and 10-minute rain delay. So that was a major issue in terms of the game.
I forgot about that, yeah.
And you had to believe that the network people are like, do whatever you can to keep them tuned in. Run as many highlights from Sunday as you can.
I mean,
Mike Tirico was at the end of his highlight rope. We're going to go back to some more. Here we go.
Did they run them twice and then ran some extra ones too?
They ran every game footage they had for the entire week 5 that had been played already. They went to London. They ran Jets Falcons highlights. I mean, are those really at the top of your list? Probably
Don't
not.
Don't forget.
They ran the debacle between Green Bay and Cincinnati with all the missed kicks.
I was in Alaska for the Sunday, because I couldn't get back. And the game started at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, the London game.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like,
it was 9:30 here. Yeah.
I was like, forget it. I'll catch you on the flip side. But I will say this, that's a long day. 5:30 in the morning until it finished at 8:30 at night. Yeah. You know, it was like a 15-hour day of football. Plus the Bills game took forever.
Yeah. So despite the 62-minute weather delay, Bills and Chiefs averaged total audience delivery of 18.4 million viewers, which was up 18% from week 5 last year, Minnesota-Seattle. First half averaged 20.8 million TV-only viewers, third best of the season, behind the kickoff game and the return.
The return of Brady, yeah.
Yeah. Viewership peaked at 22.3 million before the weather delay from 9:45 to 10 p.m., and then the NBC average of 14.7 million TV viewers during the weather delay. Now, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Football isn't even being played. They're just running highlights from games that already happened for the better part of an hour. The NBC average of 14.7 million TV viewers during the weather delay, 10:07 to 11:09 p.m., would rank as primetime TV's number 3 show for that week. A weather delay on a football game. Steve.
Well, I don't want to throw stones, but I have to admit, I have not watched a single pitch of any of the baseball.
I watched a few innings last night.
I have not seen a single pitch live at all of any of the game. Not a single game. Not, and people know I'm in a baseball game, but I'll usually for the ALCS or
I'm pulling
NLCS
for the Giants because it's the only team left in this whole damn
who
thing
is left?
That I like.
Who's left?
Red Sox are going to play the Astros in the ALCS, and then the Braves are waiting to play the winner of the Dodgers-Giants division series.
The Astros are back? Are they still cheating?
Well, it's kind of ironic that the last two cheaters are playing one another, the Red Sox and the Astros. Because the Astros cheated in 2017, and then they were followed by the Red Sox, who won the whole thing, and were cheating also in 2018. So, so much for winners never cheat and cheaters never win. There's that. But to wrap up the Sunday Night Football numbers, Sunday Night Football is averaging a total audience delivery of 22.4 million. It's the best through week since 2015. It's also up 23% from last season, which really surprises me because where the hell was everybody last year? They were all cooped up in their homes.
Right.
How is it 23% more than last year? That is.
I'll tell you what. You
that's
know what
stupefied.
It is? I'll say this. I have a theory.
Okay.
It just came to me as
the
light just clicked.
Yeah.
Here's my theory. Here's why. You go down, and we've been doing this a lot lately, and here's my thoughts. people love to tune in to particularly games, and the NFL is no different, that are star driven. You look at teams. All these teams have
Sunday
got
night.
The Chargers. They got their guy.
Yeah.
Justin Herbert, Baltimore, Lamar Jackson, Buffalo with Josh and all these got crew.
Brady last
Tennessee,
week.
Tennessee with Derrick Henry. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow. Denver, not so much maybe. Las Vegas, that's going to draw some eyeballs now just for the novelty of what's happened to them over there. But with Derek Carr and Gruden when he was there. Cleveland, Baker Mayfield. Cleveland's got all these guys. And New England, of course, with Belichick. Pittsburgh, Kansas City. Miami, the Jets, Houston, okay, maybe not.
Ugh.
But then you go to Indianapolis and Jacksonville. There's a ton of guys people are like going, are curious about, right?
Yeah.
At least curious about or just flat out want to see play. And then you look at the other conference, Arizona, Dallas has always got people, Tampa Bay with Brady, Green Bay with Rodgers, L.A. Rams with Matthew Stafford and McVay and these guys, Chicago with the drama there at their quarterback spot, Carolina with Darnold and Run-DMC, New Orleans with Jameis. All these you got people that people want to see.
Yeah.
There's a ton of stars that are driving this.
So let me,
I think that's my theory.
I like the theory. Let me ask you this. Top local markets for Sunday night's game. Okay? Tell me who was first, second, and third. And then we'll see if we can have some.
What do you mean? Like percentage
the television markets that had the highest ratings in the entire country for the game on Sunday night.
Buffalo's number one.
They were number two.
Behind Kansas City?
Behind Kansas City. So yeah. Kansas City, a 44.3 rating, 71 share. Buffalo, 42.7 rating and a 67 share.
That means 67 share means that's the percentage of TVs that were tuned in to that broadcast. Which is
pretty
high. It is a monster number.
That is a big
monster number.
There is a precipitous drop off after Kansas City and Buffalo, but who would you surmise would be the third highest NFL watching city for Sunday night football, Kansas City versus Buffalo? And it is, I will give you a hint, it is another NFL market that has a team.
Buffalo. I will say Miami.
It is New Orleans.
New
Steve,
Orleans.
With a 19 rating and a
really?
31 share.
Really?
New Orleans.
Yeah. Out of conference? Out of division?
Yeah. How about that?
I wonder why.
I don't know, and unlike you, I don't have a theory.
Right, yeah. I don't know, and particularly my theory goes the way of my attitude. I really don't care why New Orleans.
Yeah.
Seriously, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Maybe because they know they're going to play Buffalo on Thanksgiving.
I suppose, who is this Josh Allen?
In Kansas City.
Maybe they don't see much of the AFC teams, being in New Orleans. They get a lot of NFC matchups, so maybe there's a curiosity there.
That's interesting.
The number four market, Steve.
Who is it?
Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
New Mexico pulls the fourth highest rating. 16.5 rating in Albuquerque with a 29 share for Kansas City,
New Mexico.
Buffalo.
Is pot legal in New Mexico? Serious question.
I don't know. Well, there's not a whole lot to do in Albuquerque. Might as well put the game on. Nashville was fifth, which makes sense. Bills playing Nashville
next week.
Monday night.
I would think, who else I would think would be like somebody like Baltimore or Indianapolis, because Indianapolis is right there.
Baltimore was nine.
And they're still engaged in the weekend. They got to play the next night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On the Sunday night.
So some of these towns, though, New Orleans 3, Albuquerque 4, Nashville 5, San Diego 6,
good
for Richmond them. 7, Tulsa 8, Baltimore 9, Dallas 10.
I'll be darned.
Really interesting. Some of these.
That is interesting. But
some
I think
of the towns and cities that tuned in the game.
So
in great numbers.
The reason, there's a double digit increase in people watching these primetime games this year from last year, from 2020.
Which is
shocking.
Stunning to me.
Do you think it is a star driven league like that? You think
that's. Yeah.
Because
you have to have a household name.
You got to think, when you think about this stuff, it's got to be big picture. It's got to be something big picture.
Yeah.
Certainly the games have been fantastic. There's that. They've had overtime game. They've had close games. They've had, you know, the comeback game in
but
Baltimore.
But the Bills games have not been that. The closest it got after the first was 11 points. I mean, that's as close as it got.
I think one of the things, though, is Kansas City, and this is one of the things, and I said this yesterday, because Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth in particular, was getting hammered for being, you know, a fanboy for the Chiefs. I'll say this, though. In his defense, Chris Collins, we're acquainted, but we're not buddy-buddy. I'm trying to be as objective as I can. I know what it's like to be a broadcaster. He's done so many, and I said this yesterday, I think I did. He's done so many Chiefs games where he's seen the Chiefs bounce back. They've been down 15 points or two touchdowns, and it's bang, 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 they're back in it. They're down 17 points, and they're back at it in an immediate.
They did it to the Titans in the AFC title game.
Right, so he's very hesitant to throw dirt on the Chiefs at any point in that game because he's seen them come back and win it. So he didn't want to throw dirt on them and bury them before they come back and win the game.
Yeah.
So I can see that with the Chiefs team in particular. And all of us have seen that. I know this as a Bills fan. I'm sitting there going, yeah, this is great. And I'm like going, you know, I was the same way. I thought, gosh, you know, this game's still not
11
over.
11 points, yeah, it's still a game.
When they got 20-31, I was like, oof, it's going to be hard. You know, we got to keep going. And then the roughing the passer. And
that
the Bills got the first down. Well, they got the first down in the play before
that. Helped
that
big,
they
that
got taken away on
a
soft call. So they get the makeup call for the first down. The Chiefs still had a chance to stop them. It was a 75, 80-yard drive. It took forever. And the Bills ended up getting into the end zone again, 38. So it wasn't like that was the end of the game. The Chiefs had to stop them, still had chances to stop them, and they couldn't get it done. So I was never confident that that game was over. Until, you know, it was obviously over when Mahomes fumbled the snap and Tre'Davious White jumped on it. Then the game was over. But still, so that's why I think people are still watching that game late because they've seen the Chiefs come back from all of that and they want to see it and they think it might happen. So that's why the ratings, I think, stayed up all the way till the end of that game, even through the weather, the power outage or the weather delay.
That's an amazing number for a one-hour weather delay.
Yeah, people in our industry.
No football being played.
For those of you out to listen, I know some of this doesn't interest a lot of you, but people in our industry talk about it because these numbers that you talk about in the NFL when they talk about ratings
and
who's watching, it is unbelievable how big those numbers are compared to anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a juggernaut, those numbers. That's why, you know, ABC, Fox, NBC, CBS, they pay
billions
for the right to.
Yeah.
To air these games.
Yeah. We should also mention that with the game being played on Monday night, Coach McDermott has moved the team's schedule back a full day. So there is no practice today for the team. That will take place tomorrow. So essentially the Wednesday practice will be Thursday. Thursday will be Friday. Friday will be Saturday, etc. So the schedule has been moved up. So no practice news to report on today. I believe, however, they do have to submit an estimated injury report later today by rule with the league, where they will give an estimate of the participation level of injured players if they were to practice today. So we'll wait on that and see if it comes out before we're off the air this afternoon, but no practice for the team today. Buccaneers made a move. They made the decision to remove John Gruden from their team's Ring of Honor, obviously. The head coach of their Super Bowl winning team in 2002 when they beat the Raiders. And they basically said, while they appreciate what John Gruden did for the team on the field, they cannot subscribe to supporting what he represented off the field or what he subscribed to off the field. And so his name is being removed from the team's Ring of Honor. We know, he resigned as Raiders head coach Monday night, and Rich Bisaccia, the special teams coordinator, is taking over as interim head coach.
There's a lot of intrigue in what happened to John Gruden because there's some people in the media assert that those were deliberately released and leaked to the media for some reason in order to get him out of the league for whatever reason. The league has come out now. It's been reported that the league denied we didn't release any emails. They might have been leaked. Somebody might have surreptitiously obtained them, however you want to look at it.
And there is public pressure now on the league release the 650,000 pages of documents, including emails from the Washington football team, where, as we all know, there was a culture of misogyny there that had to be addressed.
And that's kind of what I was headed towards. That people are saying, well, what?
How did Daniel Snyder get off scot-free?
That's the worst thing?
Yeah.
They don't believe it. And quite frankly, it was from a guy from another that wasn't even working for the league at the time?
Yeah.
Come on. Nobody believes it. And they want to see, they want to see for themselves what those 650,000 emails have in them.
It's going to be very interesting to see how transparent the league chooses to be with one of their investigations. Because you usually it's never publicly uncovered as to what an NFL investigation found. They'll publicize what their ruling is.
Right.
But the means by which they arrived at that decision is rarely revealed in any way, shape, or form.
They fined the Washington football team ownership, Dan Snyder, $10 million. That's been reported. But that's all we've heard. Nothing.
Yeah.
We don't know why, what, who, where, what for, all of that. And people want to know.
I think the public pressure may get to a point where they're going to have to do something.
If those records...
And I understand why there's public pressure.
And we've all seen it a time after time. If those emails are out there and they exist, somebody, sometime, somewhere, someday is going to get them. They're going to come out. It just is. People, and journalists, investigative reporters, they dig until they get something. So it's... Sooner or later, it'll come out. Maybe a decade or whatever. But it's going to come out. And I'm telling you, it ain't going to be pretty.
Well, there are enough motivated people that want to know what the truth is. How far does this go?
Is somebody...
and they're willing to climb down the rabbit hole to find it.
Is somebody powerful enough ready to help them?
Yeah.
That's a good question as well.
Other NFL news. Bucs quarterback Tom Brady could be a bit of a question mark for Thursday night's game. He said he's not planning on missing the game, but he's got an injured throwing thumb. It's on his throwing hand. He had it dunked in ice during the game last week. I think he hit it on a helmet, which is often what you see quarterbacks suffer from. You know, their follow through, they hit a helmet, they jam their thumb, they sprain their thumb, they bend it backwards awkwardly. And you can't throw a football without your thumb. If you cannot apply pressure to the football with your thumb because it's all jacked up, you can't throw. You just can't. And I'm not expecting Tom Brady anytime soon to come out there and start throwing left-handed. So he's going to be pushing Arians to let him play. But if the ball does not look right coming out of his hand, he's got to do right by his team and sit down.
Yeah, that's...
You got to sit down. You can't do that to your team.
I'll say this, though. We here in Buffalo have no love lost for Tom Brady and respect what he's done and all that. I would be hard-pressed to have him – and he was nonchalant about it in the press conference. He came out and his thumb was wrapped when he came out to meet the media. And obviously that was like, hey, what's going on with that? And he was cavalier about it. So it's just a wrap. It's going to be fine. He expects to play, or at least that's what he said.
Yeah.
And I would expect that to be the case. If he's really struggling or – in a race to get healthy enough to play, we'll hear about it.
Well, and it's a short week.
Yeah,
he's
it is a
tomorrow.
Very short week. They play tomorrow. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. It may be a problem for him, but it's like everybody. Tom Brady's no different than every other player in some ways, in that he's going to play with some baggage, some little aches and pains. Everybody else does it. Every quarterback does it. He's no different.
It's just hard to function if your thumb's not right on your throat.
That's a real issue. It's like having,
I mean, if a defensive lineman
Mayfield
has a busted thumb, no big deal.
Right. You know? Baker Mayfield's got a shoulder harness on his other shoulder. It's like nobody cares. Nobody's even giving him credit.
Yeah.
But if he had a hangnail on his pinky of his throwing hand, it's like, ooh, I don't know. Right? Your thumb is even more important. So it is, and people are going to be watching like a hawk. You can bet the camera's going to be rolling Thursday night on when he comes out of the tunnel for the first time. What's his thumb look like? What's he got on it?
And if he, for some reason, cannot play, his backup, Blaine Gabbert, would make the start. A journeyman quarterback, if ever there was one. Former 11th pick in the draft. Is that right? I think he was the 11th pick in the draft.
Something like that.
A while ago. I'm not even going to remember the year. I want to say it was like 07, 08, somewhere in there. So he would have to suit up and play. They also have Kyle Trask, the former University of Florida product, but I would expect Blaine Gabbert to start if Brady cannot. We have to take a break here. We do want to remind you our Twitter conversation today, aside from those that have already won, Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, Greg Rousseau, who wins the next Player of the Week award for the Buffalo Bills with the way they're rolling here on offense and defense. Give us your pick at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive. When we come back, we're going to pass along some of the sound we failed to get to yesterday from the coordinators, Leslie Frazier as well as Brian Daboll, with some notable comments we wanted to pass along to you. We'll get to those next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Wednesday. And Steve is going to play the role of StatCat.
This came across my social media feed. It's from Yards Per Pass Twitter account. And they said, ask if you're ready for a wild stats about the Bills' defense. So here's the thing. The Bills' opponents have turned the ball over on 22.8% of their possessions versus Buffalo's defense. 22.8, almost 23% of the time the opponents have the ball, they turn it over. Now, their opponents have scored on only 19.3% of their possessions. That means teams, when they get the ball in a game against the Buffalo defense, they're more likely to turn it over than they are to score points on the drive 5 weeks into the season. There have been a couple of teams who have done that. Three teams in history have done that for the season.
For a whole season.
The 2006 Ravens did it. Now, they lost 15-6 in the playoffs to Peyton Manning and the Colts, who won the Super Bowl that year. Also, the 2002 Buccaneers did it. They won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And the 2000 Ravens did it. They won the Super Bowl. So, pretty lofty company there. Baltimore Ravens have done it twice, where you can get your opponents to turn the ball over more often than they score points on any drive that you get in any game. And the Bills have been doing that.
Yeah. About 3%.
By a 3% difference, yeah. I mean, that's... You talked about it. They got 15 turnovers.
That's not easy to sustain, but the Bills have one of the easiest remaining strength of schedules, and as I mentioned to Steve during the break,
yes,
five of their remaining 12 games are against rookie quarterbacks, two against Zach Wilson, two against Mac Jones, and then Trevor Lawrence. So it's almost half of their remaining games are against rookie QBs. How are those guys going to do?
Yeah,
against this defense.
Rookie quarterbacks are notoriously turnover machines. I mean, we've seen it
especially
here in
Buffalo.
But yeah, but man, oh man, that's some lofty stuff for the Bills defense to get off to a start like this. Now, you and I are talking about it, and I've said it in this show, and I'd be interested to hear what you say. It's hard to play that good for that long. I mean, it takes some mental toughness like nobody's business to get up and play against it. By the time you get to Jackson. So you get to Jacksonville, right? Jacksonville is going to be, let's see. By the time the Bills get to Jacksonville, it'll be November 7th. It's week nine. They'll have eight games. Jacksonville might be 0-9.
Could be.
0-10.
Could be.
Or 1-10. And you got to like rise up. And
then you got the Jets after that.
Oh, man.
Jets do have a win.
You gotta jump on it.
They beat the Titans in overtime.
You know, I mean, it's man, oh man, it's a long season. But as an incredible stat. Bills opponents have turned the ball over almost 23% of the time they've possessed it. Every 23% of the possessions they've had, and they've only scored on 19.
More often than one in five possessions, they turn the ball over.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And you wonder why they're number one in red zone defense.
And in the years past.
And last week was a red zone takeaway, Greg Rousseau.
Right.
Red zone takeaway.
And also it was a red zone takeaway when Mahomes coughed it up with a snap.
And they had another one down in Miami when Milano jumped on the forced fumble.
It's, And I'll say this, too. It's you talk about the biggest difference, and it is the play up front. The guys are playing, not the Mahomes fumbled snap. That had nothing to do with the Bills. But their play up front is the biggest difference in what's going on. Their secondary was, I don't want to say playing like, you know, without being supported by the front. They're just getting more help in the back end this year than they have gotten in years past. And I think that has made that little exponential jump to get them into a spot where, man, their teams are turning it over a bunch.
And, Steve, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's going to serve as the perfect segue to a comment made by Leslie Frazier this week on the defensive line play against the Chiefs. So let's hear what Leslie had to say about it.
In order for our secondary to play as well as they did and to contain both Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, I mean, you need your defensive line really having a great outing. So Eric Washington, along our D-line coach, along with Jock Cesari, his assistant, did a terrific job in really laying out the plan for our defensive line of what we had to be able to do. Because this quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, man, he's a tough, tough dude to corral and contain. And, you know, he's so explosive and he can do so many things. But our D-line did a great job of finding ways to contain him and to be able to get some hits on him as well, which allowed, you know, our back end to have some success. And, you know, Greg Russo was outstanding throughout the game. Ed Oliver did a terrific job. Jerry Hughes, just a, you know, everybody on our D-line, star, they all did a terrific job for us.
So there it is. Hard to argue, too. And, yeah, it is a big difference. It has been a big difference. And it's not necessarily been in the form of sacks. It's just been enough consistent pressure to disrupt the timing of the opponent's passing game, whether you're making the quarterback hurry a throw, you're forcing him to release it a half a second early, maybe the receiver hasn't even started to come out of his break yet, that allows a defender to jump that route. Those kinds of things are cropping up with this defense. The Bills probably are not going to have a 12 or 14 sack guy on this roster this year. Because they spread the wealth so much. Nobody plays enough.
Right.
You know,
it's a long season. They'll
percentage of snaps.
I said this.
The high is like 55%.
Yeah. I said this in the offseason. I said that Greg Russo may come in and have more sacks than any Bill did a year ago as a rookie. He may not lead the team.
Trying to beat 5.5. That's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
In a 17 game season.
Right. So he's going to do that, I think.
They might all do it.
I'll say this. You look at all the quarterbacks in the league that are playing really well. Josh, Mahomes, even if you think he's playing well or not, Justin Herbert, certainly Lamar Jackson. Go down the list.
Burrow. Did you say Burrow?
No. Burrow, Aaron Rodgers, all the guys that are playing well, even Dak Prescott. The guys that are playing well have the ability to extend plays. They've got the ability to get outside the pocket, to make the defensive line hurt you, or, you know, to chase you or just break contain or whatever. The Bills' defensive line has kept Pat Mahomes in check a lot of the time. Not all the time, but they're doing a much better job and they're more capable this year of not letting plays get extended. When the play's not extended, the quarterback's got to get rid of it or take a sack. That leads to turnovers. It leads to turnovers, and that's what this team is capitalizing on right now. The fact that the defensive line of the Bills is forcing the ball out against a really good secondary and not letting, more often than not, not letting quarterbacks run all over the joint, get loose, buy some time, and putting so much pressure on the secondary they can't live up to it. The secondary of the Bills is very good, and now we're finding out how good because the ball has to come out, whereas a year ago maybe didn't come out quite so fast, and they had guys extending plays, and it's just, you know, puts too much, an impossible amount of pressure on your secondary. This year, that secondary is not under that much pressure, and the ball's coming out in a more desperate manner, and they're capitalizing on it.
Yeah. Flipping it over to the offensive side of the ball, Brian Daboll was asked this week about the chemistry between Josh Allen and Dawson Knox. Obviously, when they score 5 touchdowns in the last 4 games, or combined for 5 touchdowns in the last 4 games, that's a question that's going to be asked. So here is Brian Daboll's take on their on-field chemistry.
Yeah, well, I've told you guys this since camp. I mean, this is a tough position to play in this league, tight end. And when you're coming from a school that uses you a particular way, or you're a walk-on quarterback, there's a lot to learn in this game at that position. And it takes time to develop. and he's smart and he's tough and he's got good skill set and he's worked really hard to, you know, try to help our football team. You know, we have a lot of confidence in him. You know, the amount of times we use him or don't use him again, that's, you know, 1 week it could be a lot. 1 week it might not be as much. But we have confidence in all our guys.
So, I mean, it's kind of – that's Brian Daboll speaking in generalities, as he is wont to do at times. But I think you have to give the majority of the credit to Knox for developing his personal game. You credit the coaching staff for player development, tight ends coach Rob Boras, chief among them. And the light bulb's on now in year three. I mean, this was a guy, as we've said several times, Steve, guy caught all of 15 passes in college and, I mean, was not even option three or four in the scope of an offense that had A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf in it. So you can understand why. And he's also young at the position. It's like, oh, yeah, we know you're a walk-on quarterback. We're going to try you a tight end now. Make that work. Oh, by the way, we want you to also play tight end at the highest level of football, even though you've only played it for 3 years.
Right.
Go get him.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of that. And I'll say it again. I called it in the offseason he was going to bust out. But I think also, too, this is a situation now where, and Daboll mentioned it in his sound right there, in this coaching staff under McDermott, one of the things I love about the program they've installed and the way they do business is that if you're playing well, you get more play. If you've got a hot hand, even during a game in one series, if you're doing well, you're getting more time. You're getting it. They're going to you. If you work hard, you get on the field. If you're a practice squad player and you're practicing hard and you're doing well, you're getting activated. They give you what you earn week by week by week by week by week. So you can bet that if Dawson Knox continues to play like he's playing and practicing like he's playing, you're going to see more of him.
Well, and I think a sign that they had confidence that he was going to be able to do what he's doing now is when they parted ways with Jacob Hollister, when they reduced the roster to 53. Right. People are like, oh, why did they get rid of that guy? They signed him in free agency, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's because Dawson Knox looked like this in training camp.
Right. That's why they didn't trade for Zach Ertz and pay him $8 million bucks. That's why they didn't, you know, they knew before any of us knew. Well, any of you knew because I knew.
It's on the whiteboard. We know. We have to take a break here.
Big red yes in front of that one.
Or a big green check mark, whichever one you want.
That's right.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll play one more comment from Brian Daboll on the emergence of Emmanuel Sanders in the scope of the offense. We'll get to that when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. This week's game sponsor is the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills. So, game sponsor this week for the Monday night affair in Nashville between the Bills and Titans. Kickoff 8:15 p.m. on ESPN and right here on WGR 550. Wanted to pass along one more comment from one Brian Daboll, who has been asked several times about Emmanuel Sanders, but he was asked what it means to have a veteran who's as experienced as Emmanuel Sanders among the wide receiver group. Here was his thoughts on that.
He's a pro. He really adds a lot to our football team. Particularly on the offensive side, but I'd say just as a veteran leader in general, he does everything the right way. He works hard. He leads by example, but he's also a vocal leader when he needs to be. He's, you know, you can tell why he's been such a successful player, 12 years in the league or 12 plus. So when his number's called, he's ready to go. And he made some big plays for us.
So, Steve, we've seen Dawson Knox and Emmanuel Sanders account for 9 touchdowns over the last 4 games. When do we expect the attention of opposing defenses to swing more in their direction and further away from Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley? You're still talking about two guys that had 92 and 127 receptions last year. It's going to take a lot of doing to get opposing defenses off of Diggs and Beasley, because they still hold a lot of respect. But you cannot ignore if you're an opposing defense, what Knox and Sanders have done.
Well, that's what you want to get to as a point as an offense, where you've got too many weapons for a defense to take away. I think what they'll do, and I think the philosophy for defenses would be to force Josh to have to think a little bit before he drops back. Like, you don't know who you're going to guard. Now, certainly you can't leave Steph Diggs alone. The Chiefs found out what that was, and he nicked him for a 58-yard or 61-yard catch down the middle. It could have been a touchdown. But I think what they'll do is they'll pick their spots, and I think they're going to try, and with all those weapons, they'll try and anticipate with motion and shifts and formation and personnel on the field. The defense are going to say, okay, in this formation, in this personnel, our priorities go Diggs, Sanders, Beasley, Knox, or Diggs, Knox, Sanders, Beasley. And it's up to Josh to figure out which one's going to be open first and try to figure out which guy they're going to try and take away on this play so you can get the matchup you want somewhere else. And they're going to try and put it in Josh's plate to sift through whichever guy they think has got the best matchup.
There were times last week where Josh had all day to survey his options.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah, that's a crusher.
A lot of times he had a pretty clean pocket. We know he can also extend the play when he doesn't have a clean pocket. And just to quickly look at it, the Titans are 19th in sacks per play. It's a small indicator as to what kind of pass rush team they are. They're in the bottom half of the league. Bud Dupree has not come through as they had hoped here in the early part of the season. Maybe that'll change as he moves further and further away from his ACL knee surgery in the offseason. But they're not the defensive front that they used to be, Tennessee.
Well, no, that's one of the things that gets lost in all of this, particularly if you sit here in Buffalo, we're kind of getting accustomed to it. Even though you see a group of guys that are still here from a year ago and maybe a smaller group that's here from 2 years ago and an even smaller group that's here from 3 years ago, these teams are different every year. And I think, for instance, a team like Green Bay, a team like, you know, some of these other, I don't even want, like the Giants, they have not evolved at all. And Buffalo has been very willing, even after a 13-3 season, even after a 10-7 or 10-6 season 2 years ago, where they got in the playoffs and got put out by the Texans, they're very willing to wash through the roster with some pretty prominent guys who have really contributed. John Brown last year and 2 years ago and 3 years ago, gone. And they replaced him with a new player. A good player, no question, but still that's a transformation that I think a lot of teams are very hesitant to do. And I think the Bills have embraced this thought that, listen, if a good player comes in, we're going to get the most out of him no matter what. So they don't really mind having new players in this. But as a result, the Bills team changes, I think, vastly from year to year, more so than most good teams do. And perhaps, fingers crossed for Bills fans, that leads to them being able to sustain this window even longer.
We have to take a break here, but when we come back, NFL UK reporter Neil Reynolds is going to join us. He's going to talk about the London game last week, the next one coming up this week, as well as which German city could be getting games as early as 2022. There are three finalists. We talked to Neil about that and what NFL teams are racing to market themselves in Germany. Talk all of that with Neil next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, touchdown, Buffalo. And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve, a blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are, hour number two here on One Bills Live on a Wednesday. Time for us to go to the other side of the Atlantic, where we're going to be joined by NFL UK reporter Neil Reynolds, who's going to join the show. He hosts Inside the Huddle and the Neil Reynolds podcast. He also has the Bills number one in his latest power rankings over there, calling them the team to beat. Let's welcome in Neil now. All right, Neil, good to have you. Things picked up on the other side of the pond there. You guys finally have NFL football back. Jets at least made it a game last week. What were the returns that you got maybe from the fans over there from the entertainment value of that one?
Just really, first of all, happy that it was back. 707 days between NFL games from when we waved goodbye to Houston and Jacksonville in 2019 to welcoming in the Falcons and the Jets. So it felt like a real celebration. They had a flyover. They had a national anthem. The U.S. anthem was sung from the top of the stadium. The lady was perched in the most incredible place, Marisha Wallace, singing the national anthem. So a real celebration. For a while it looked like the game was going to be a struggle. Thankfully, the Jets kind of woke up, made it a contest, and then Atlanta had one more big drive to put it away. But just really, really glad that the NFL's back and the fans deserve it over there, over here. And it was a good day, long day. I was working from on Sky Sports from about 1:30 in the afternoon. We were on air, and I came off air about 10 to 1 in the morning. So yeah, but it was a good one.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a long day, a lot of football. It started very early here and ended very late. But what are the impressions of this early in the season? We're 5 games into it. We still have 12 games to go in the season, so a lot of football to be played. What are your impressions of how the league is different this year than it was last year? Which teams have emerged, a la the Chargers, that kind of thing? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think every year we get surprised, don't we? We don't expect everything that is presented to us. It feels like one of the more, and I know it's early, but it feels like one of the more incredible seasons taking shape. So many last minute finishes. What we've had 19 games in the last minute or overtime decided that way. We've had Detroit punched in the gut twice with long field goals to lose games. The emergence of Justin Herbert is a real story. The passing prowess of Lamar Jackson has been a story. The slippage from the Chiefs a little bit has been a headline. And I'm sure you guys are smiling happily because you are, in my opinion, top dogs in the NFL, the Buffalo Bills. They're number one in my power rankings, have been for a couple of weeks. You see the magazine behind me that way? There it is. That's Josh Allen on the cover of my preview magazine, as we discussed before. I picked Bills for the Super Bowl. I picked him for the MVP. They're not letting me down right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why we're having you on the show, Neil. I mean, the thing we're most excited about is that the Bills are number one in your power rankings. I mean, what higher honor is there? I don't know that there is one. You guys got another one coming up this Sunday. A familiar team in the Jacksonville Jaguars, as we know Sean Kahn's inclinations of kind of putting his team stamp on UK fans. I don't know how well that is taken in light of their struggles to be competitive. But they've got the Dolphins in an all-state of Florida matchup. What would you say, Neil, in your opinion, having observed the UK fans far closer than I have or Steve has, what is your opinion as to which team has taken well or maybe infiltrated the fandom of UK fans best?
So the Jags are certainly trying to do that, and they've made gains in recent years. But I think you can't go against some of the history of where this sport kind of started in the UK. The real heyday of this sport was just before the Bills went on their Super Bowl runs, the late 80s, the mid 80s. And so there is a massive fan base for the Miami Dolphins. And I think I've spoken to you guys about this in the past. It's kind of ironic because it was all started by Dan Marino, and they've struggled to find that answer ever since. I think it's going to be a lot of effort put towards the Jags, but I think this will be a Dolphins crowd, and I'm hoping it'll be a competitive game because it's two struggling teams. Let's be honest, this is two disappointing teams. So, I'm hoping they at least serve up some entertainment.
What are your thoughts on the topic coming out and the news coming out that the NFL is going to go to Germany within the next few years? We've talked about that in the past. How does that sit? Obviously, it's probably a good thing for the London football fans as well. The more games in Europe, the better. You're going to be part of that mix no matter what going forward. What are your thoughts on Germany getting a game in 2022?
Really, really excited. I'm hoping it's 2022. I think they're still going to work out those logistics with World Cup and a compressed football schedule. But they deserve it. The fans deserve it. Some of the best nights I ever had covering American football were in Germany in the old NFL Europe League. And I'm glad to see two old friends of mine, Dusseldorf and Frankfurt, make the final three along with Munich. So, and you're right to point it out that way. This is not a competition between the UK and Germany. This is an opportunity for British fans to hop on a plane for an hour. You know, we have fans come from Germany to the games in London. We have fans come from Scandinavia, from Spain, across Europe. British fans are going to have another game right on their doorstep. So we know we've got two games every year at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Very interesting now coming up is the ability for up to six teams to market themselves internationally in each market. So we could have other teams vying for London games which fall outside the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So we're definitely going to have two. Maybe we have three. Maybe we have four. And we're going to have potentially a game in Germany. So, yeah, it's fantastic. And I'm pleased for the German fan base. I think it was really tough for them when NFL Europe closed because it was such a, you know, such a strong place for American football. I'm already lobbying my producers at Sky Sports. We are covering that game. I'm going to be there.
Neil, it leads me to my next question, which I don't know if you've seen this, but I know the Sports Business Journal here in the U.S. has been reporting on this pretty heavily, that NFL clubs are already battling each other tooth and nail to get the in Germany because it is a very untapped market in terms of developing a fan base or a fan following, but it's clear that these billionaire owners here of these NFL clubs in the U.S. see the value in being first to the party, so to speak. So do you have any sense as to maybe who could have the inside track, who historically might be popular in Germany, if you have any knowledge of that at all?
I really don't, but I think their fan base was kind of growing not long after it was in the UK. So, you know, Dallas Cowboys, maybe one. I honestly would be guessing on that, fellas, but you're absolutely right to say that owners want to get in on the ground. I remember, I don't know if this was almost kind of forgotten now, but it was the Rams who made the multi-year deal for the UK first. And then they figured out their stadium in situation in St. Louis. And suddenly they pulled out of that. And actually when they pulled out, that was music to Shad Khan's ears because he wanted in on the UK and the Rams kind of beat him to the punch. So there is going to be competition for it, I think. And I think that's all going to be good because there are going to be multiple teams, I think, will vie for the UK as well. You know, if you think about the San Francisco 49ers have an interest in Leeds United, in the Premier League team there. You've got the Glazers with Manchester United from Tampa Bay. You've got Stan Kroenke with the Arsenal football team. So, you know, I think there's going to be teams queuing up to market themselves here in the UK, and there's going to be teams doing exactly the same in Germany. And I think it's just great for the European football fan. Yeah, you know, and who knows where we go down the line. But, you know, if you do still want to look that franchise route, then maybe you have a local rivalry between Germany and the UK. The one thing I think which would probably reduce British fans to tears is if the first game in Germany features the Green Bay Packers, because the Packers are the only team that haven't played in London.
Okay. I see. So is that, well, we're just really, we're still, even though it's been years and years where we played American Bulls in the preseason, the league has been coming over for a couple of decades now. We've still, I feel like it's only begun to scratch the surface of what the NFL could do overseas. Likewise, you're going to do a tour of the U.S. You're going to come over and do a Great Lakes tour coming in December. What are your thoughts? When does that start? What are your stops going to be?
So first stop is a Monday night game in Buffalo. So never been to a Bills home game. Cannot wait. So the game against the Patriots in December.
Oh.
I always say from the warmth and comfort of a studio, oh, I love games in cold weather. It's football weather. It's great because I don't have to sit through it. Well, now I'm going to sit through a Monday night game in Buffalo, but I can't wait. I might even cover myself in ketchup and mustard.
Oh, don't do that. There's no need to do that, Neil. Don't feel like you have to go to those lengths. That's not a sane mind or body.
That may be a step too far, but
it's up to you. Then. I mean, you can do what you want, Neil, but
shoot yourself.
I wouldn't recommend it. I felt obliged.
Now I'm going to go from there. Then we're going to go to the Thursday night game between Pittsburgh at Minnesota. Luckily, that's indoors. So, this is a cold trip, this one. And then the trip finishes up at Lambeau Field for the Bears at the Packers. I won't be on that leg of the tour because I'll be back in the Sky Sports studios doing my regular Sunday gig. But, yeah, looking forward to catching some live action and looking forward to seeing Bill Belichick's grumpy face in the cold as the Bills put 40 on his team.
So it's going to be different as a fan, naturally, in the throes of or in the throng of the fans that are largely be Bills fans. I recommend insulated boots. So do your best to find a pair of those because your feet are what seem to get cold the fastest.
Neil, here's what you find out when you live in Buffalo. If your hands, your head, and your feet are warm, the rest of your body will be fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
So gloves, boots, hat.
Yeah, take care of your feet, your head, and your hands, and you're good to go. And we've had a warm fall, so I don't know if we're going to get to snow by the time you get here in December. I mean, naturally, I'll be hoping for it for you just to add to the ambiance.
Neil, we're going to have
snow. Why make it easy for Neil, right?
Brownie's sugarcoating it right now. You're going to get snowy, believe me. Yeah.
You might.
When you go to Minnesota, you're going to freeze.
I might as well get the full experience, at least. Right. I hear what you're saying. I don't need to make it worse for myself by covering myself in ketchup before.
Yeah, we don't need to make condiments a part of the equation.
We'll love you just the same if you don't cover yourself in mustard and ketchup.
Yeah, but it'll be good. You'll have a great time. The energy here doesn't change based on the weather because people still turn out in droves, especially with the team playing as well as they are. I wanted to get your – I know you kind of keep a really close ear to the ground on the league. So what are your thoughts about the pecking order in the AFC? We don't have an undefeated team in this conference anymore. Arizona's the lone remaining unbeaten, and they're over in the NFC, as you know. But what do you think of the AFC, at least the top tier, as you see it? You know, I know you have the Bills number one in your power rankings, but maybe just take it a step further. Just tell me who you feel is in the mix to contend in the top tier of the conference.
Like I said, I have the Bills at the top. I think the Bills are the clear number one team in the entire NFL for me. But the AFC is still going to be a wild playoff picture when we get there. I believe in Justin Herbert. I believe he's so special. You know, if you think he missed the first game of his rookie year, he didn't. He's only, five games into his second season, and he already has the most 300-yard passing days of any player in the first two seasons. He's had 11 300-yard passing days. He's the real deal. It's incredible what he's done. So I think he and the offensive weapons make the Chargers dangerous. I don't trust Baltimore's defense, but they're looking like they're putting up points. So I'm not sure about Baltimore. I think they'll be in the mix. So I'd say Chargers are the most, the strongest contender. Cleveland are strong. And I'm not going to write off the Chiefs because if they stop shooting themselves in the foot and we know how quickly they can score points, I think Buffalo and Kansas City might meet again. They're just going to have to do it in some really, really cold weather with lots of noisy red, white, and blue fans, I think. So those would be the leading ones for me. But I have been very impressed with the Bills. I just hope teams like the Chargers, teams like Dallas, if we spread it out to the rest of the league, I hope that teams that look really good right now with their star players don't suffer a season-altering injury, because that's when I think it's really depressing when you see a team knocked off what could have been a championship course. But we're in for a really exciting season. There's some real quality teams at the top.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed as well, and I mentioned this on an interview I did this morning, that it's hard to imagine a team. Well, we've seen the Chiefs do it. We've seen some other teams do it for stretches. Last year, the Pittsburgh Steelers got off to 11-0 start and then stumbled to the finish. It's hard to play such a long season at such a high level. And I think one of the things that the Buffalo Bills have to fight against now is the length of the season and continuing this high level of play on both sides of the football. What are your thoughts about just the length of the season, an extra regular season game? Yeah, you do get an extra playoff team this year. There are 7 instead of 6. All of that stuff goes into the mix. But this is a really, really difficult season to be playing so well so early and hope that you can sustain it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that actually the other day driving into Sky Sports. We were 4 weeks in and we were down to 1 undefeated team. Yeah, so everyone can knock everyone else off. Which is incredible. And I was kind of thinking, obviously, we do this, or we have to do this in the media. Fans want to talk about the sport. They want to talk about the game. And we fill hours and hours. We're on air for 7 and 8 hours live every Sunday night on Sky Sports. But I was thinking, where a team is in week 4, week 5, week 6, you know, or we react instantly to a team losing. Well, the Bucs lost. They got hammered by the Chiefs in week 12 last year, and they went and won the whole thing. So I think you're absolutely right. That old kind of Bill Belichick classic phrase, the season doesn't start until Thanksgiving. I mean, every game is still important, of course, but sometimes what we react to now is not going to matter. There could be someone hiding in the pack. I mean, I don't think there is. I think the quality of the league is the quality of the league, but someone can get hot and someone could get very cold. And that's, I get the kind of trepidation there that you know, if you start off red hot, can you maintain that? It's certainly how you finish that's going to count this year.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the Bucs. They were on a 3-game losing streak during that stretch last year and turned it all around. It's pretty remarkable. I wanted to get your take, Neil, on the rookie quarterbacks that are playing an awful lot. You got an up-close look at Zach Wilson this past weekend. You're going to get a look at Trevor Lawrence this week. So maybe just give me your thumbnail sketch of your impressions on the rookie quarterbacks who, you know, I think we all expect rookie quarterbacks to go through their share of personal struggles as well as team struggles because they're usually going to teams that need the help.
Yeah, and they're getting a lot of pressure on them. You know, they're getting a lot of pressure to produce, but they're getting physical pressure literally every other snap as well. I think Zach Wilson, when I saw him last week and I watched him practice the day before, just very, very talented. You know, he made one throw early in the game against Atlanta, roll into his left. It was actually called back for offensive holding, but he kind of threw against his body to the sideline. It was fantastic, just the natural talent. I'm very interested to see him say that he's overthinking things. I saw that comment after the Atlanta loss because there was just a split second where, you know, I'm often watching on TV. I'm not in stadiums, and we were in the stadium. And you see receivers flash open, and then you're expecting him to deliver the ball, and he didn't. And that was glaring to me when didn't kind of stand out when I watched him on TV. But you could argue he probably needs to think a little bit more because he's been a bit reckless with the football, and he was on Sunday. He doesn't take the 8-yard hitch. He doesn't take the 5-yard out. He's going for it a lot of the time, and you can't do that in the NFL all the time without paying a price for it. Trevor Lawrence, I think, is going to be we've seen enough there to kind of, I think he's going to be good again, slow to process some stuff. He's just in a really difficult situation because, you know, I hear him say there's no reason to panic. Then I hear Urban Meyer saying we need to panic. Then I hear Urban Meyer saying we haven't practiced the goal line sneak. And then I hear Trevor Lawrence saying we practiced the goal line sneak just fine. I mean, that's a mess there at the moment. And for a rookie quarterback to walk into that and then have to deal with that, I think that's really tough on him. So I think Trey Lance wasn't ready, and we've seen that. I think he's going to need time. And Mac Jones is on a team that's kind of steady but not very spectacular, which I think has been him early in the season.
What about Justin Fields in Chicago? The Chicago Bears fans clamored day and night for him to get on the field. They got their wish.
Changed play callers because it went to Bill Lazor.
That's right. So a lot of things going on in Chicago. What are your thoughts about the Bears?
I knew I'd forget one of the rookie quarterbacks who went through them. Oh, no, so thanks, Steve, for bailing me out.
No. It's a long list, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it has been. I think he's. I don't see the harm in letting him play this out now, because I think if you change the system for him, change a few plays for him. You know, the touchdown he threw to Jesper Horsted in the end zone last week was a laser. It was an amazing throw. But here's the most pressured quarterback in the NFL since he's been in there. So again, tough situation. But I don't see the point in hanging around with Andy Dalton at the moment. I think I would, if it doesn't break him and if it doesn't damage him too much in terms of mentally and processing everything, I'd like to see the Bears give Justin Fields a run. I think he's got something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish up with a two-part question. First, I know, speaking of quarterbacks, Ryan Leaf was the latest guest on the Neil Reynolds podcast, and we know the personal demons that he's had to deal with personally. You talk about pressure for rookie quarterbacks. Fortunately, it seems like he's come out on the other side of that okay. First, tell us some of the ground you covered to kind of preview that interview for people that want to take a look at that on the Neil Reynolds podcast. And then second, I'm terribly curious as to how you handle the viewing of primetime games in the States, because it's like 1 or 2 in the morning over there for you. So I need the honest truth. Are you such a fanatic that you stay up and watch it live, or do you DVR it and catch it the next morning?
Right, I'll give you that answer first. Oh, I 100% DVR it and watch it the next morning. Even to the point, I caught myself the other day doing a promotion. I was doing a promo read during our live coverage from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and I was talking about the games. We had 4 live games on Sunday. We had the Jets and the Falcons, the Packers and the Bengals, the Giants and the Cowboys, then the Bills and the Chiefs. And in my promo read, I then said, and then we'll get a few hours sleep, and then we'll go again and watch Indianapolis, Baltimore. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, there's no way I'm watching that game live. There's no way. But so I know I DVR it and I watch them the next day, and I watch them throughout the course of the week if I need to, as and when I need to research those games. As far as Ryan Leaf was concerned, Ryan's been a kind of remote guest via Zoom and Skype on Sky Sports NFL this year, looking to get him involved a bit more. And I actually started the conversation with him on my podcast saying, I'm glad I've got to meet you, because the person I've got to meet is a really nice guy. And I said, and the person I thought you were, reading the headlines, I said, you were not that. You were anything but that. And he fully admits he was a pain in the backside when he was, you know, a younger guy. And he just didn't appreciate what he had. He thought he could. He even said that we talk about an incident. There's a famous incident where he's towering over a reporter in the locker room, screaming at him. It was all caught on camera. Junior Seau comes in and drags Ryan Leaf away. And I asked him, I said, what did you think when you saw that? He was like, that's embarrassing. But he said, that's what I thought I was. I thought I was the big man. I thought I could shout everyone down. He righted a few wrongs in the podcast as well. I mean, there's the famous Vegas trip, which was kind of described as I've heard it described as like a week-long party or an all-nighter where he was drunk. And he actually went to Vegas with his family on the plane that was chartered for him by it was a private jet of the team owner of the Chargers. He didn't drink all night. He went there, had some family time with his dad and his brothers and his cousins, and the next morning went to the Chargers facility. It was never a problem. It never got raised. It was never an issue. Until he started playing badly. Then it became a weapon to kind of beat him with and a stick to beat him with. So, yeah, he's a nice guy, Ryan. He's a really good guy, and he's obviously been through a lot. And I'm glad I didn't know him before, but I'm glad I know him now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I covered him in his first game as a professional athlete, and he had a long way to go, but so do a lot of rookies. We didn't know how it was going to turn out then.
Yeah, his first win was against the Bills.
That's
16-14.
Yeah. I was in the booth. Yeah, that was my
Doug
first
Flutie
game.
Doug Flutie came on the second half and tried to rescue them.
Last one, we've talked about everybody in the league except for the last game that took place this last weekend, the Monday Night Football game, Indianapolis at Baltimore. And Lamar Jackson came out in the second half. And for those people who didn't see it, put on a display of quarterbacking that I would say, I would submit that a large percentage of football fans around the planet did not think he could perform. He threw the football extremely well, completed 80-plus percent of his passes, 86% of his passes in the game. He just put on a performance that was unparalleled in the NFL. What are your thoughts about Lamar Jackson? And certainly, he is probably the most important player on any team in the league to his team. Without him, they are done. But what about his performance on Monday night? I think it probably, even despite the fact that Josh Allen and other guys put up great numbers this last weekend, I think Lamar Jackson's performance on Monday night was probably a standalone performance.
Yeah, I would agree, Steve. He had a game in the second half. He had a game's worth of numbers in the second half alone. And I would take your point, which is 100% correct. Fans would not think he was capable of doing this. I would extend that and say there are a fair amount of coaches around the NFL that didn't think he could do this. And I think they'll watch this film and they'll be thinking, how do we now prepare for the Baltimore Ravens? Because we always had this thing, put it on Lamar, shut down the run. You know, has he really shown us he can be an every down passer? You know, has he won from behind? Is he a front runner? All of it goes out the window, and not just from this game. You know, he's done it a few times now this season, came back against the Chiefs as well. So if I'm watching that as another coach in the NFL, I'm concerned about how I defend the Ravens. If I'm a Baltimore fan or a fan of exciting football, I mean, just exciting football. I mean, he makes you say, wow, four or five times in every game, but especially on Monday night. I mean, it was incredible. It really was. Yeah, I hope it lasts, because, you know, that was one of the big offseason narratives, wasn't it? Oh, well, you know, Baltimore are 32nd in passing last year. They can't pass the football. Can they upgrade? Well, if they can, and also they didn't look that impressive in week one losing to the Raiders, and they look like they haven't got very much, or certainly not what they used to have on defense. And here they are at 4-1. They just have winning in their DNA, the Baltimore Ravens.
I would submit they're probably one of the most mentally tough teams in the league by far, and I think it wills them to victory sometimes when most people don't think they have a chance, because I had them dead and buried in that game. I went to bed. Speaking of not staying up for games, I didn't make it for that one. I was still trying to recover from a wee hour of the morning assignments on Sunday night into Monday. Right. So I had to bail on that one. But surprised, to say the least, that Lamar Jackson threw for over 440 yards. Neil, as always, thank you for the perspective from the other side of the Atlantic. I'm sure you'll be keeping your ear to the ground on the developments in Germany, so we look forward to catching up with you in the future when those developments become more concrete. Thanks, as always, for the time.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. Good to see you again.
That's Neil Reynolds, NFL UK expert. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, more of your comments on the tweet sheet and some player sound, hopefully, in the near future. It's One Bills Live, presented by the Collide of Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And time to get to the tweet sheet, Steve, because we threw the topic out there and we haven't really had a chance to discuss it. We've been jammed up here all day long. Aside from those who have already won, Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, Greg Russo, who wins the next Player of the Week honor for the Bills? And we go to the tweet sheet now, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving provider of the Buffalo Bills. And Mark says, my hope is that it's Stefon Diggs. Even with all of our success, he still hasn't broken out this season. I feel like it's coming and coming soon. Go Bills. How close do we think we are to a Stefon Diggs breakout game?
Well, I don't think he needs to break out. He's
like a big production game. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
120
we'll see.
Yards.
He may be a guy the teams just do too much to take away. And here's the thing. Some of the teams you see that feed guys target after target after target after target, they do that because they don't have
other options,
or at least as viable other options. It's, you can throw to a covered Steph Diggs or something like that, or you can throw to a wide-open Dawson Knox or a wide-open Emmanuel Sanders. That's just the way it's going right now.
Yeah.
Think about what you know, think about what Cole Beasley's going through today. He had like just 22 snaps for the entire game, had one catch. That's where being unselfish goes a long way toward helping the team be successful. Steph Diggs and his captaincy has taken, you know, a more vocal role in leadership. The leadership he's going to have to display now is patience and grace, knowing that there's going to be a lot of weeks where he doesn't get the number of targets that he would like to get, but he's still out there and he's still contributing because the defense still focuses on him. So, yeah, I don't know that Steph Diggs is going to – he's not going to lead the league in catches and yards this year like he did a year ago because of the way defenses see the Bills' offense.
Yeah.
But his presence on the offense is still a huge factor in their success.
Brad on the tweet sheet says, I think one of the running backs is due. We will have a big running game this season. The guys are getting better and better. Moss is improving so much each game, and Motor has improved a lot. It'd be nice to see them get an award. I think if they do, they're going to have multiple touchdowns, and they're probably going to need three or four receptions for some decent yardage as well. I got to say, I've been pretty impressed with what Moss has done, you know, as a swing pass, safety valve, check down option in the passing game. He had a couple of nice plays in the Sunday night game against the Chiefs. And I remember watching his college tape, and while he can be a bruising runner, I think he is underrated as a pass catcher out of the backfield.
Yeah, the Bills have never used those guys that much in their passing game. They throw them swing passes and screen passes and that kind of thing. They threw them a couple of times this last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, but they've never been, you know, a team that splits their guy out wide and has him run routes. That's a hard thing to do for a running back, especially the ones that the Bills have in Singletary and Moss. Those guys aren't built for it, and it's not their skill set, so that's why they're not getting asked to do it.
Yeah.
I think if a running back is going to get Offensive Player of the Week in the AFC, you're going to have to light it up. I mean,
right,
big time. And you're going to have to make
Because you're battling people every week like Derrick Henry.
Well, you're battling people like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert. And for a running back to get that?
Oh, my gosh, you just rattled off quarterbacks. That's funny.
You know, you're not gonna beat those guys out for the AFC Offensive Player of the Week unless you light it up for a couple hundred yards and a couple of touchdowns. And probably one of those touchdowns has to be in the waning moments of a close game where you break five tackles. You know, it's hard for a running back to win that.
Yeah.
No matter how well they play. I mean, they could bust out, and sometimes they'll get a little mileage out of it. They're like, oh, hey, he busted out and had a great week. Okay, give it to him, kind of thing. Like, you know, a kind of one-off week.
Yeah.
But
where none of the quarterbacks do anything. How rare is that?
Right. There's a confluence of events that may lead to that, but I don't know.
That's a big
confluence.
I like
Moss. I like Singletary, those guys. But, man, that's an uphill battle trying to win that award.
Yeah, I don't
you've got to be a receiver that has, you know, 12 catches for a 165 and a couple of touchdowns.
Yeah.
And
including the game winner.
Including a game winner or
or
one of those plays that stands out. It's like, yeah, and you throw for one on a reverse, right? So it's a quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
Dawson Knox, think about the game Dawson Knox had this last week.
Didn't get a sniff.
Not even a sniff.
Because you had two guys throw for over 400.
He's like eighth on the list. If he gets on the list.
Well,
and, you know, the other seven guys are quarterbacks. It's, yeah, so it's.
Good luck.
Yeah.
From Bills fan 12 to 83, I'll go with Matt Milano because he has played so well already this year. As long as he can stay away from injuries, he will fill up the stat sheet. I like Milano as an option here, and it's going to be very interesting to see if he's healthy enough to play this week. Hopefully he is. That was a coup, huh? Beating the Chiefs and
without Milano,
saving Milano's hamstring for a week. I mean, that's
– yeah.
He struck gold twice there.
Yeah, that's – yeah. Milano is – he hasn't missed that many games over the course of his career. I was surprised. It seems like he always misses one or two a season, but he doesn't miss an entire season.
The only one that
he broke
his
leg is
that was the
year.
One time.
He that's broke. The one year – one time. The rest of it has been one game here, two games here, there. I think he's missed a total of 10 games out of 50 possible or 55 possible, something like that.
Still 20%.
I don't know if it's even that much, but yeah. So that's and it's been over his two games. Like I said, you know, he missed, I think, like, what, six games his rookie year, and it's only been four since.
Yeah, it was either 17 or 18.
Yeah,
that
so
he broke his.
Yeah, when he is on the field and on the field for a long time, the guy is a ball hawk. And I think you mix Milano up, or put him in the mix along with Poyer and Hyde. You got three guys in the middle of your defense, along with Edmonds, four guys, that are really rangy.
Versatile.
They're ball hawks, too. They got ball skills, and they can all run, you know, and they're all in the middle of it. And you add in, you sprinkle on top of that the added production they're getting out of their pass rush. And the quickness of the ball has to come out now. Either the guy's going down or he's busting out. He's, you know, that leads to a lot of productivity for those middle guys. Poyer, Hyde, Milano, A.J. Klein last week, and, of course, Edmonds as well. So I think Milano's a really interesting character because we see him do so many great things when he's in there.
Yeah.
And when they're out, to win a game like that with him out of the lineup, I think it does say something about their depth and about the quality of guys around him. It's not just about Milano.
Jack says it's got to be Dawson Knox. With his athleticism and the way he's finding the end zone right now, plus Allen is looking for him in all situations, he's becoming a go-to guy. I have no doubt he'll explode for 7 to 10 catches for like 150 and two or more touchdowns in a game and get that recognition. Those are the kind of numbers it is going to take.
Yeah, he'll get – if he has like a double-digit catch game, if he has 10 catches for – forget about the yardage. If it's 120 yards, let alone 150, and a couple of touchdowns, yeah. Then he's in the conversation. In a game the Bills win, yes. Yeah, tight end is easier to win the award than it would be at running back.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's a passing league.
Yeah.
JT says, I'll throw in a wild card. Isaiah McKenzie is going to go off one of these games. He's predicting another Week 17 special, apparently.
Think about that. The Dolphins
are coming
up.
He didn't get it that week.
Yeah, the Dolphins are coming. Yeah, he didn't. The Dolphins are coming up. They may have a little scar tissue from Isaiah McKenzie, but it's in there. I mean, a couple of kick returns and bust one for the go in the distance, and plus have a couple of other returns that are really good. Yeah, McKenzie could win it. Special teams, and I'll say this as a guy who knows, it only takes like two or three plays for a special teams guy to get it.
Speaking of special teams, Robert says, big leg Bass for special teams player of the week. That could happen in a week where maybe they're not killing it in the red zone.
Did he
get it last year in that Arizona game when he had the three? No, because they lost the game. Three 50-plus yarders he didn't get it because they lost.
Did he win it in the Jet game where he was 6 of 8?
I think that's when he won it.
That might have been it.
I think that was
it. So a game like that happens, and yeah, he could get it.
All right.
Got to make more than 6 of 8.
Good contributions there on the tweet sheet. Thanks for those. We have to take a break. But when we come back, Steve and I close it up for a Wednesday here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Some interesting news out in Las Vegas concerning the Raiders. As we know, John Gruden resigned Monday night. Rich Bisaccia, the special teams coordinator, now running things there. But Mike Garofolo from NFL Network is reporting that Raiders GM Mike Mayock says Carl Nassib has requested and was granted a personal day today because he has, quote, a lot to process following the John Gruden email situation. For those that don't know, Carl Nassib, defensive lineman for the Raiders, is openly gay, came out in the spring, and was applauded for doing that, as that cannot be easy. I can't put myself in his shoes, but that still, to this day, is not an easy thing to do in our society. So he was roundly applauded for that, including by Commissioner Goodell. Can't imagine what's going through his head after right. This latest email news on John Gruden's behavior on email, which included homophobic remarks.
Yeah, this is gonna stick around for a while. It's got some legs, and this Raiders are gonna have to finish the rest of the season, the bulk of the season, with an interim head coach. So we'll watch the Las Vegas Raiders, see how they handle this. They have always been an organization that has been all about diversity.
Yeah,
and to see them go through this is pretty disturbing.
Yeah. We will have practice field coverage tomorrow. We'll see what the status is on Matt Milano, Coach McDermott sound, as well as player sound, including that from Josh Allen. And we've got an interesting announcement to make. Steve and I will get to that tomorrow. Don't miss it on Thursday.